By all means.
Is it not thus, then, chiefly that the individual man changes from the democratic to the oligarchic form?
How?
When such an one has a son, he, first of all, emulates his father and follows his steps. Afterwards, when he sees him suddenly dashed on the state on a rock, squandering his property and ruining himself, either at the head of the army or in some other high magisterial office, then falling into the law courts, ruined by public informers, and either put to death or exiled, and stripped of his honours and entire property.
It is likely.
Aye, my friend, and after seeing and suffering this, and losing his property, he instantly, through fear, I think, pushes headlong from the throne within his soul, his ambitious, lofty temper, and at length, humbled by poverty, turns his attention to gain, lives meanly and sparingly, and by hard labour acquires wealth. Do you not think that such a man will seat on that throne in his soul a covetous and money-loving spirit, making it a mighty king within himself, and girding it, as it were, with tiaras, and bracelets, and scepters?
I think so.
But, as for the principles of reason and high spirit, having laid them both at his feet on either side as mere slaves, he forbids the one to reason at all, or at any rate, to inquire into aught else, except by what means a smaller amount of property can be made greater. And the other, again, to admire and honour anything but riches and the rich, and to receive honour with any other view than the acquisition of money, or whatever else may tend thereto.
There is no change, so sudden and powerful, as that of an ambitious to an avaricious man.
Is not this, then, the oligarchic one?
Aye, the change which he undergoes is from a person who resembles that government from which oligarchy arises.
Shall we consider, now, if he does at all resemble it?
Let us consider.
Does he not, in the first place, resemble it in valuing money above all things?
Of course he does.
And he does so surely in being sparing and laborious, satisfying only his necessary desires, and not allowing himself any other expenses, but subduing the other desires as foolish.
Certainly.
And in being a sordid kind of man, making gain of everything, intent on hoarding, one, such as the multitude extols, will not this be the man that resembles such a form of government?
I think so. Wealth at least must be highly valued by the state, as well as by the individual of such a character.
Aye, for I do not think that such a man has attended to education.
I do not think he has, for he would not then have chosen a blind guide for his course.
But further still, consider this attentively, must we not say that, owing to his want of education, dronish desires springing in him, some of them beggarly, and some mischievous, forcibly kept under restraint by the rest of his pursuits?
Just so.
Do you know, then, where you will best observe their wickedness?
Where?
At their tutelage of orphans, or whatever else of this kind comes in their way, so as to give them much power to do injustice.
True.
Is not this then quite clear, that in all other kinds of contracts, wherever such an one gains approbation, by the mere semblance of justice, he restrains the other wrong desires within him, by exercising a certain moderation, not from any persuasion, that it is not better to indulge them, nor from sober reason, but from necessity and fear, because he trembles for the remainder of his property.
Certainly.
Aye, by Zeus, my friend, most of them, when they want to spend the property of others, display passions much akin to those of drones.
Yes, exceedingly so.
Such a person as this, then, will not be free from internal discord, nor be integrally one, but a kind of double man, possessing desires, however, that are at variance with one another, the better, usually, governing the worse.
It is so.
On these accounts, then, such an one, methinks, will present a better appearance than many others, though the true virtue of a harmonized and consistent soul will wholly escape him.
Aye, it seems so.
And the sparing man, either privately or in the state, will be but a poor rival, as regards any victory or other struggle for honour, because either for reputation's sake, or any such contests, he is unwilling to spend his property, through fear of kindling expensive desires, and calling them into alliance or rivalry, and warring, as he does, in oligarchic fashion, with only a few of his resources. He is in most cases defeated, though he still contrives to get rich.
Quite so.
Can we any longer hesitate to rank the niggard and the moneymaker as resembling a state under an oligarchy?
By no means.
Democracy, as it seems, must next be considered, how it arises, and when once arisen, what kind of man it produces. in order that understanding the nature of such a man, we may at once bring him to trial.
Yes, that would be our consistent course.
Well then, is not the change from oligarchy to democracy produced in some such way as this, through the insatiable desire of the proposed good, that is to say, the desire of becoming as rich as possible?
How?
Inasmuch as its governors govern through the possession of great wealth, they will have no wish, methinks, to restrain by law the profligate portion of the young men from squandering and wasting their property at pleasure, because, by purchasing such persons' effects and lending on usury, they will not only be still more enriched, but held in higher repute.
Far more so than any other.
This, then, is already quite clear in our state, that to honor riches, and at the same time practice temperance, is impossible, since either the one or the other must necessarily be neglected.
Of course, that is quite plain.
Well, therefore, they are neglectful in oligarchies, and allow the youths to indulge in licentiousness. They must necessarily sometimes bring men to poverty, even those that are not ignoble.
Quite so.
And these, I suppose, stand in our state both spurred and in armor, some in debt, others in disgrace, others in both, hating and conspiring against those who have got what belonged to them, and against others also, for mere love of change.
Aye, such is the case.
These usurers, however, bent on their own interests, and apparently unobservant of these, wound all that ever yield to them by advancing them money, and so, by getting multiplied interest for the parent principal, fill the state with many a drone and pauper.
Aye, with many a one.
And even when such an evil is raging in the state, they are not willing to extinguish it, not even by restraining people from spending their property at pleasure, nor yet in this way by making another law to destroy such disorders.
What law?
One that shall follow the other, compelling the citizens to cultivate virtue. For if they were bidden to engage in voluntary contracts chiefly at their own hazard, their usurers would create less scandal in the state, and fewer also of the evils now mentioned would arise therein.
Far fewer.
At present, however, it is by all these means that the governors in the state thus dispose of the governed, and both as to themselves and those belonging to them, do they not render the youths luxurious and idle as respects all bodily and mental exercises, effeminate in bearing pleasure and pains, and indolent likewise?
What else?
And as to themselves, they neglect everything but the acquisition of wealth, and pay no more regard to virtue than the poor.
No, surely.
Having then been thus strained up, when the governors and their subjects are thrown together, either on a journey along the road, or in other meetings, either at public spectacles, or on warlike expeditions, either as fellow sailors or fellow soldiers, or when they see one another in real dangers, the poor in this case are by no means despised by the rich, but very often a robust fellow, poor and sunburnt, whose post in battle is by the side of a rich man bred up in the shade, and swollen with much unnecessary fat, if he should see him panting for breath and in agony, think you not, he will consider such persons to grow rich to their own injury, and will say to his fellow, when meeting in private, that our rich men are good for nothing.
Of course, I well know that they do so.
Well then, as a diseased body needs but the smallest shock from without to give it pain, and is sometimes thrown into disorder without any interference from without, so also the state, that resembles it will, on the smallest occasion from without, either when one party forms an alliance with an oligarchical, or the other with a democratic state, become disordered, and fight with itself, and also rise in revolt without any external interference.
Yes, certainly.
A democracy then, I think, arises when the poor prevailing over the rich, kill some, and banish others, and share the state offices and magistracies equally among the remainder. And for the most part the magistracies therein are disposed of by lot.
Aye, this is the establishment of a democracy, whether it be effected through force of arms, or from the withdrawal of the other party through fear.
In what way, then, do these live, and what will be the character of this government? For it is plain that a man of this kind will appear democratic.
It is plain.
First, then, are they not free, and is not the state full of freedom of action, and speech, and each one at liberty, to do what he pleases?
So it is said.
And where there is liberty, everyone will evidently regulate his own plan of life just as he pleases.
Plainly so.
Under such a government especially, methinks, men of all characters will spring up.
Of course.
This seems likely to be the best of all governments, just as a various colored robe embroidered with flowers of all kinds, so will this appear best, variegated as it is with all sorts of manners.
Of course.
And perhaps, too, the multitude will reckon this the best, just as children and women looking at embroidered dresses.
Very likely.
Aye, my excellent friend. Here is a state in which we may fitly look for a government.
How so?
Because it comprises all kinds of government on the score of its liberty, and it seems necessary for one that desires to establish a state, as we are now doing, to come to any democratic state, the form of which he likes, as to a general political fair, and establish that which he has chosen.
Aye, he would probably be in no want of models.
Is not this a divine and pleasant kind of life for the present, that there be no need of governing in this state, even though you be able to do so, nor yet of being a subject, unless you please, nor of engaging in war because others do, nor of keeping peace when others keep it, unless you desire peace, nor again, though there be a law that restrains you from governing or administering justice, yet you no less shall govern and administer justice, if so disposed.
It is likely, in this particular at least.
But what? Is not their lenience towards some of those who are condemned very polite? And in such a government did you never yet see its lenity towards men condemned to death or banishment, who nevertheless remain there in open intercourse, the banished man too, returning like a hero, as if no one attended to or observed him?
Aye, many.
But this indulgence of the state, not to mention the small regard, and even contempt which it shows for all that we deemed so important when settling our state, was that, unless a man had a most exalted nature, he would never become a good man, except he had from childhood upwards delighted in noble actions, and diligently followed all such pursuits. How magnanimously does it despise and think as not all these things, evincing an utter disregard, as to the kind of pursuits from which a man comes to engage in politics, though it honors him, if he only declares himself well affected towards the multitude.
How very generous.
These then, and others akin to these, are to be found in democracy, and it seems to be a pleasant sort of government, both anarchical and variegated, distributing a certain equality to all alike, both equals and unequals.
You say what is perfectly well known.
Consider then, what kind of man such an one is in private? Or shall we first consider, as we did with respect to the government, in what manner he is formed?
Yes.
Is be not then formed in this manner, namely, from the parsimonious man who was under the oligarchy, as a son, trained up under Big Father according to his habits?
Of course.
Such an one forcibly governs his own pleasures, such as are expensive, but not tending to the acquisition of wealth, which are hence called unnecessary.
It is plain.
That we may not argue in the dark then, let us first, if you please, determine what desires are necessary, and what are not.
Willingly.
May not such be justly called necessary, which we cannot get rid of, and the gratification of which does us service? For both these kinds our nature must necessarily seek after, must it not?
Quite so.
This then, we may justly say, is a necessary part to these desires.
Justly. But what now?
Such desires as a man may relinquish, if he try to do so from his youth, and which while they remain, do no good, if we say of these, that they are not necessary, shall we not say right?
Right, indeed.
Let us select a pattern of each, that we may understand from example what they are.
Quite right.
Is not the desire of eating necessary so far as is conducive to health, and a good habit of body, and the desire of food and victuals?
I think so.
The desire of food, at least, is necessary unto accounts, as being advantageous in itself, and because the want of it must bring life to an end.
It is.
And the desire of victuals is likewise necessary, as contributing towards a good habit of body.
Certainly.
But what? Even such desire as goes beyond these things, or any other sorts of meats, and yet can be curbed from youth, and trained to abstain from most things, and which is hurtful both to body and soul as regards the attainment of wisdom and temperance. May not that be rightly called unnecessary?
Most rightly, indeed.
May we not say then, that these two are expensive, and the others frugal, as they conduce towards the actions of life?
Of course.
We may speak in the same manner, surely, of venereal, and the other desires?
In the same manner.
And did we not, by him whom we just now called the drone, indicate a person full of such desires and pleasures, and governed by those that are unnecessary, but one governed by those merely necessary, a parsimonious man, arid disposed to an oligarchy?
without doubt.
Let us again mention how the democratic man arises out of the oligarchic, and to me, he appears to arise chiefly thus.
How?
When a young man brought up, as we now mentioned, without proper instruction, and in niggard fashion, comes to taste the drone's honey, and associates with those fiery terrible creatures who can procure all sorts and varieties of pleasures, and from every quarter, then you may conceive, he somehow begins to change the oligarchic for the democratic character.
It must be so.
Well then, just as the state was changed by the aid of another party from without to which it was related, is not the youth so changed likewise, through the aid of one species of desires from without, to others within him, which resemble them, and are allied thereto?
By all means.
And methinks, if any alliance should come to counteract the oligarchic principle within him, either through his father or other relatives, admonishing and upbraiding him, then truly will arise sedition, opposition, and an internal struggle against himself.
Undoubtedly.
And sometimes, indeed, I think the democratic yields to the oligarchic principle, and some of the desires are destroyed, while others retire, because a certain modesty is engendered in the youth's soul, and he is again restored to order.
This is sometimes the case.
And again, I suppose, when some desires retire, others allied to them secretly grow up, which through neglect of parental instruction, become both many and powerful.
This is usually the case.
They draw them then towards the same intimacies as before, and through their connections secretly generate a multitude.
What else?
And in the end, I think, they seize the citadel of the youth's soul, because they find it empty, as regards virtuous pursuits and true reasoning, the best guardians and preservers of the rational part of men dear to the gods.
Just so.
And then, indeed, false and arrogant reasonings and opinions rush up in their stead, and take their place in such people.
Assuredly.
And does he not then come once more, and dwell openly among those low tophagi? And if any aid come from intimate friends, to strengthen the parsimonious principle within him, these said arrogant reasonings, by shutting against it the gates of the royal wall, neither permit the alliance itself, nor allow the ambassadorial admonitions of individual old men, but struggle against them, and maintain themselves in power? And as for modesty, they call it stupidity, and thrust it out into disgraceful exile, while temperance they call unmanliness, load it with abuse, and then expel it. And as for moderation and decent expense, they persuade themselves that they are nothing else but rusticity and illiberality, and banish them from their territories, with many other unprofitable desires.
Assuredly, they do.
Having emptied and purified from all these desires the soul, thus held by them, and initiated in the great mysteries, they next introduce with encomiums and false eulogies, indolence and anarchy, extravagance and shamelessness, shining with a great retinue, and wearing crowns, calling insolence, good breeding, anarchy, liberty, luxury, magnificence, and impudence, manliness. Is it not, somehow thus, that a youth, after being bred up with necessary desires, falls away into the license and dissoluteness induced by needless and unprofitable pleasures?
Yes, plainly so.
Such an one, then, methinks, thenceforth passes his life, spending his property, labor, and time as much unnecessary as unnecessary pleasures. But if he be fortunate, and not unusually excited by passion, he, as he advances in years, and the sovereignty of the passions is subdued, readmits part of those expelled, and does not deliver himself wholly up to mere intruders, but regulates his pleasures on the principle of equality, and so lives, giving himself up to each incidental desire that happens to rule him, till he is sated, and then another, undervaluing none, but indulging all alike.
Quite so, of course.
And yet such an one will not listen to true reasoning, nor admit it into his stronghold, should he be told that some pleasures are attached to honorable and virtuous desires, others to those that are depraved, and that he should pursue and honor the former, but chastise and hold captive the latter, but in all these cases will dissent, and say that they are all alike, and to be held in equal honor.
Assuredly, one thus affected does this.
Well then, thus does he daily live, gratifying every incidental desire, sometimes getting drunk to the sound of the flute, at others temperately drinking water, at others, again exercising gymnastics, sometimes indolent and wholly careless, then again applying, as it were, to philosophy, often to acting the politician, saying and doing by skips and jumps whatever comes first, and if he would imitate any of the military tribe, thither he is carried, if the mercantile, then again thither. Nor is his life regulated by any plan or law, but, deeming this particular life pleasant, and free, and blessed, he follows it throughout.
You have most fully described the life of the man who places all laws on a level.
At least am of opinion that he is multiform, and filled with different habits. Like the state too, he is handsome, and a varied complexion. A man was so life many men and women would emulate, because he contains within himself numerous patterns both of forms of government and moral habits.
He does.
What then? Have we then so described and arranged such an one on the principles of democracy, as that he may be truly called one of democratic character?
We will allow that it has.
It still remains, however, that we discuss that most excellent form of government and that most excellent man, tyranny and the tyrant.
So really.
Come then, my dear fellow, what is the manner in which tyranny arises? For it is almost plain that it is a change from democracy.
Plain.
Does not tyranny arise in the same manner from democracy, as democracy does from oligarchy? Ours respects the good then, which oligarchy proposed to itself, and according to which it was constituted, was it not with the view of becoming extremely rich?
Yes.
An insatiable desire then for riches, and a neglect of all besides, through attention to the acquisition of wealth, destroys it.
True.
And with reference to what democracy denominates good, an insatiable thirst for it destroys it likewise.
But what say you, it denominates as good?
Liberty. For this, you are told, is best found in a state under democratic rule, and hence anyone naturally free would choose to dwell in this alone,